This call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, Tim. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the UDRP Domain Name Lock Working Group on the 13th of June 2013. On the call today, we have Hege de Faller, Michaela Nalen, Matt Schneller, Alan Greenberg, Lisa Gavano, Christine Durain. We have received no apologies for today's call. From staff, we have Marika Koerning, Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Michaela.
Thank you. Good afternoon, good morning, good whatever to everybody. As per usual, does anybody have any changes to their SOI or any of those other wonderful things?
Does that mean I have to say whether I'm not interested anymore? Or interesting? It's Alan.
Well, no, it's a statement of interest, not a statement of interestingness or commitment. So you don't have to get into that.
Sorry, this is my third hour of teleconferences, and it's only 10 o'clock here. So.
Are you getting a little punchy, Alan?
Oh, yeah.
He gets like that every now and again. I find the best way to cope to deal with him is just ignore it. I think he's looking for sympathy.
No. I strongly support ignoring.
Yes, I've got this is my second today, and then I've got a registrar XCOM call this afternoon, I think. And then I'm off to Austin, Texas tomorrow.
Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Oh, do I have to update my SOI to include the fact that to include that or not?
I think you better.
I can't staff people. Lovely ladies, including Barry, who we've just designated as a lovely lady, too. Do I need to update my SOI to include that or not?
I think you should, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, for the record, then, I should inform you, for all formally, that I will be updating my SOI to reflect the fact that I am now chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. Okay, then. Right. Okay. Oh, David Maher is back again. Hello, David. And, oh, with us. And the WIPO gentlemen who are sharing the one account have appeared. So, I mean, you're sharing one phone as well, gentlemen?
Yeah, we've just got the one phone. We're trying to economize.
Well, if you could cut... I'll shut up. I was going to open up a can of worms, and then you're all going to get offended, so I won't say anything. Yes, we encourage such things. You can say WIPO is going green by cutting down the number of phones that you have. There's no registrar today. Oh, no, there is this one. Laurie from GoDaddy, and they're big enough to account for several registrars, so that's perfect. Okay, then. Now, one of the issues we were looking at was the settlement thing. And I'm not even too sure I'm looking at this note on the screen. Marika, is this one of your creations?
Yes, this is Marika. So I looked back at the transcript of the last meeting because I had to miss the last bit of the discussion. So what is up on the screen is basically the two options that we put out in the survey. The results of the survey, so the option A was supported by 88.9% of the respondents and option B by 11.1% of the respondents. And then below that, I noted some of the issues that I believe were raised during last week's call, but I don't think the group came to a conclusion as to what that means for whether we support option A or B, or whether there are some additions that may need to be made to one of those options to accommodate for those issues. So maybe for those that weren't on the call, I can maybe just repeat the concerns or issues that were raised. I think the first point that was made that, you know, the registrar does not have a relationship with the complainant. So I think from a registrar side, there was a preference for the UDRP provider to take on the role of sending a notification to the registrar in the case of a settlement. But it was also pointed out that the registrar does receive a copy of the complainant of the complaint that contains the relevant information about the complainant. UDRP providers, I think, state on the call that they don't have a relationship with the respondents. So from that perspective, I think they feel a little bit in an awkward position of having to tell the registrar what to do, as they cannot provide any guarantees either that, you know, the parties they're dealing with are really the parties they say they are or involved in the dispute. But registrars, I think, counter that, you know, the information has been verified by the registrar, so they should have the information on who the respondent is. And I think it was also pointed out that if the working group would indeed recommend option A, in which case the UDRP provider would be responsible for confirming the settlement to the registrar, that registrars do need to be aware that this would not absolve them of any responsibility under the UDRP. As I think I said before, the UDRP provider doesn't necessarily have a tool by which they can verify or confirm that, you know, the parties are really the parties that they say they are, which I think is this current situation that registrars are in as well. So I think that's what I basically took away from what I read in the transcript. I don't know if there's any other points people want to highlight here, and I think the question is where does that lead us?
Okay, so don't all raise your hands at once. Oh my God, there's like this massive queue of people there. It's really impressive. You all want to speak on this subject. I'm so happy. Okay, that's not working. Alan, thoughts?
Come back to me in a minute. I'm just rereading it and trying to come up with a thought.
David or Ty, or David and Ty. I'm not too sure which one's which, but okay. The WIPO offices.
Thank you. We've been trying to sing in sync, but it doesn't work so well, so maybe I'll just talk. I just will note that the option which is sketched out and presented here in option B essentially describes what currently happens. So unless there's a real problem with the way things are currently working, I suppose I'd express a reticence to move away from that norm, unless there was a strong reason for doing it, at least from a provider perspective. And the other point is just to a question, I suppose, for Marika, which is just, is it possible to know how many responses we got to the survey?
Marika won't be able to answer you for a couple of seconds. She dropped herself off the call.
Okay. I mean, obviously, if it's just a few responses.
She's on her way back in. Just give her a second. I mean, if you want to sing in chorus in the meantime, it's kind of like hold music, if that's okay.
We left the karaoke machine at home, I'm afraid.
Ah, you're no fun.
Hi, it's Monica. I'm back again. Sorry for that. Pushed the wrong button and managed to disconnect myself. I think the question, because we did have the sound on that we connect on, I think the question was how many people responded to the survey. Is that right?
Yep.
Just pulling up the results. So this is a question.
It's got to be 9 or 18, I would think, based on the percentages.
Of course, my internet is somewhat slow as well. Here we go. So we had 8 people choosing option 1 and 1 person choosing option B.
And what percentage of the total group does that constitute, Marika?
You mean total number of working group members?
Yeah.
Or total number of members responded to the survey?
No, total number of working group members.
I need to quickly get a number, but I think we counted yesterday, and I think we had, or last week, and I think we have 18 or 19 members. But I think we do need to take into account as well that we do have a number of people in the group that are not active. I'm sure they maybe monitor the list, but they're not active participants.
Okay. Laurie, and then Alan.
Hi, Port. My concern with B is that it states that the registrar unlocks the name to allow the transfer, and I'm afraid that that might be interpreted by registrars that the registrant will do the transfer or move the domain name to the control of the complainant. And if we're trying to prevent any kind of flight, you know, the domain could transfer away, or the registrant may not complete the settlement. So it seems like the registrant should not have the option to do that, or you know, we could run into more problems. It just seems like if the registrar is the one doing the change, it would be more efficient and safer.
Okay, thank you. Actually, where's the wording? Where's the wording transfer in this, Laurie?
Number three, parties request the registrar to unlock, not to manage anything further like terms, just unlock to allow the transfer. So that to me sounds like the registrar is going to allow the registrant to do the to implement the settlement agreement.
Right, okay. And just as a kind of just thinking out loud here, do we really want to talk about, do we want to, if we, is it to transfer, do we want, would we want to leave something as vague as transfer, or would you be happier with something like, say, transferring control of a domain? Because I'm thinking of a scenario, say, where you would move the domain into an account for the complainant as opposed to transferring the domain to another registrar immediately, which would kind of solve your flight problem. Possibly.
Absolutely. But it should be made clear that the registrant or that the registrar is the one responsible for making that change.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's fine. I'm just trying to just thrash it out. Just I'm thinking about some of the stuff that's been going on in other working groups, because this is one of the problems that we've run into, is where there's kind of overlaps. I mean, the IRTP, the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy changes that are to be implemented in the next few months include some changes with the change of control of domains, which didn't previously exist. I'm just wondering, do we want to use a term as vague as transfer without specifying that it really refers to transferring the control of the domain, as opposed to being interpreted just mean transfer registrar?
Right. I mean, at GoDaddy, we use change of account or change of registrant.
Yeah.
Rather, if we talk about transfer, we're talking about the transfer between registrars.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, in the context of this, what would we want it to be?
I would say change of control, maybe.
Okay. Does anybody have any objection to that concept before I move on to Alan?
Alan has a question about it.
Go ahead, Alan.
I'm not sure I see the difference. Once the registrant is changed, that registrant can change the registrar almost immediately. Can they not?
No, they can't.
Why not?
Because the IRTP policy is changing.
How do you prevent a registrant from changing registrars?
By making a policy that does not allow them to change registrars every 5 minutes.
Okay.
I mean, Alex, it's not that simple. I mean, there's a rationale behind it.
Today, there is no difference, I don't believe.
Today, there is and there isn't. Today, there is language in the IRTP where there's options for registrars to allow certain things at certain times or not. We cannot allow the transfer of a domain name within the first 60 days of registration, but when a domain name has been transferred, let's say you register a domain with GoDaddy, then you transfer it to Black Knight, and then you want to transfer it to web.com.
That I understand, but here we're changing the registrant.
Yeah, I think I'll have to look at the exact wording, but I think that has been actually changed slightly just to help mitigate against the
My hand wasn't up.
Registrant and jump type scenario.
All right. If we do that, I have no real objection, but I think we've got to be careful about the wording. My hand was up for something else, so when we're finished with this, you can come back to me.
Okay, thank you. Laurie, do you want to add anything further to this?
Yes, I just wanted to say that, you know, technically, until the case is dismissed, the UDRP case is still active. So this maintaining the status quo, not allowing transfers, would still apply.
Okay.
So we're, in our case, we're not going to allow a transfer to another registrar while a UDRP case, until a UDRP case is dismissed.
Which makes sense.
Or concluded somehow.
Sorry, what's that, David? Was somebody saying something there? Okay, moving on to Alan.
Yeah, first a question and then my comment. Under the option B, what triggers number four, that is the dismissal by the provider? Anyone?
This is Christine from NASA. And when four happens, it's because, at least with for us, when the parties notify us that they're going to settle, we issue a stay order to the registrar that says you can allow the parties to transfer this domain name between them and only between them. And then we tell the parties that if they don't get back to us and tell us that they didn't settle, we're going to assume that they did and the case will be automatically dismissed.
Absolutely.
So we don't. Nobody has to affirmatively do anything to have the case dismissed. And the way the forum does their, the way we do our dispute, our settlement process. So the parties have to come back to us and tell us that they didn't settle, and that one of the parties wants the case to go forward, and within that time period, otherwise we're going to assume they did.
Okay, so you give them a certain time frame.
Yeah, it's 45 days here. This, okay. I know LIPO does it a little differently. I think in something that David Brochner submitted, it looks like maybe they do two 30-day options, but we do one 45-day, and that's it.
Okay. I guess my overall comment is I have some level of unease with David saying option B is essentially how it works today, and yet 8 out of the 9 respondents said they prefer option A. And I have a bit of a trouble understand putting these two together.
Well, there's only two providers on the call, Alan.
Well,
and I voted option B.
Yeah, but therefore you're the only one because there was only one B.
Right, and so right, and I don't know whether David voted or not. And then I have to guess that most of the other people who voted are registrars, who, as we talked about last week, appear to believe, whether they're correct or not, I will leave to, you know, to everyone's imagination, that they're going to get some further security or assurances based on having the provider tell them that they need to transfer the domain name, leaving aside the fact of whether or not we actually have the authority to do that. But so I think if you have to look at the demographic of who actually voted for which option, right?
Well, but since we're trying to have a policy that works, if the people who have to implement it and on the registrar side and me on behalf of users think option A is better, leaving it as B, I think, is problematic. I mean, yes, it may involve more work for the provider, and maybe your fee goes up because of it, but if that's what we need to make the system secure, I'm troubled, and in particular, we're not looking at the large registrars who do these every day, but the ones for whom this is an unusual occurrence.
Right, Alan.
Somewhat concerned.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And like we talked about last week, again, I agree with you. The large registrars mostly have this under control. I think that the one thing that concerned me about what you said, and just to kind of tie back around to where we left our conversation off last week, is that it's not, you know, you referenced about more secure, more assurances in the process. It's not going to be any more secure or any assurances. And as I pointed out last week, the provider itself does not have the independent authority to issue a transfer. The panel issues a transfer. And maybe that's a distinction, as everybody thinks the provider and the panel are, you know, one and the same. But the provider is just the administrative body. The panel is the one who orders the actual transfers. So you're asking my staff to try to decide whether or not, you know, they should be allowing parties to transfer and making a legal determination as to whether or not they should order a registrar to transfer a domain name. It's not a panel order. UDRP policy paragraph 3 says we will transfer the domain name if we get an order from an administrative panel, not from just the provider who's administering the administrative panel.
No, Christine, I understand that. And maybe A is worded wrong. Maybe option part 4 of A is the provider through the, or you know, on instructions from the panel issues or whatever the, you know, the right terminology is. I have no quibble with changing that.
Right, but then I think one of the problems you're going to get into, I'm just predicting here, and our resident IP lawyers who are complainants representatives can weigh in, but one of the things that complainants and respondents want when they settle is they don't want a panel decision, not even a consent determination. They don't want any UDRP decision with their name on it published on the Internet. And because all the UDRP decisions have to be publicly published, they want to have a settlement that basically shuts down the process before the decision gets out there. So if you say, yeah, we're going to have the panel order a consent judgment, which we talked about last week, it makes perfect sense to have these cases maybe go to a panel for settlement, then you're going to have UDRP decisions published online. It also raises an issue, and it looks like David maybe has his hand up and he wants to address this, but I think WIPO maybe offers their money back if parties suspend and stay before a certain point. That would also mean that the parties would not get that in that situation, but I'll step down for a second and let David answer if, in fact, his hand is up.
Yeah, that's right, Christine. At WIPO, there is an option indeed for parties that are able to successfully settle their dispute before a panel is appointed to receive a refund, which amounts to two-thirds of the filing fee. So it can be a significant incentive for parties to reach an amicable agreement before the panel is appointed. So it would be a bit unfortunate, I think, if we would be looking at a situation in which we would require a panel to be appointed simply for the purposes of giving effect to an agreement that had already been reached between the parties. And that's precisely what option B essentially does. It provides a process through which an agreement that the parties reach can be given effect by the registrar. And the proposal essentially would give a registrar an option to unlock the domain name for purposes of giving effect to that agreement, you know, solely for the purposes of transferring or changing the registration data to reflect that of the complainant per the terms of the settlement agreement itself.
Sorry, David, could you go back? Just what did you say about changing the who is details to be what now? Sorry.
So it provides a process by which the registrar can give effect to an agreement reached between the two UDRP parties,
right,
which typically would require changing the registration data to reflect the information of the UDRP respondent to the information of the UDRP complainant.
Okay, but is that always actually going? I mean, how is that going to be supplied to the registrar?
Well, typically it would come in the form of an agreement that the parties themselves would supply to the registrar for that purpose.
Okay, and how is I, as a registrar, how am I going to know that that's actually genuine and not completely bogus?
Well, that would require the registrar, obviously, to be satisfied that the agreement is a genuine agreement between the parties. And typically, you look at the agreement, you see that it's come from the complainant and the respondent in the UDRP proceeding, and you would ascertain that, at least at WIPO, because you would have all of the relevant contact information that would accompany any of the communications that would be sent out in the course of the proceeding, some of which the registrar would receive. And that communications information would allow the registrar to determine that the complainant is X, who they say they are, that the respondent is X, who they say they are, and that the contact information would be obtained also from that communication document. But of course, it would require the registrar to put eyeballs on the agreement between the parties and to ensure that it exists in fact.
Okay. All right, thanks. I'll let Marika go, and then we have Laurie. And sorry, Alan, and then Laurie.
Yeah, this is Marika. My question or comment actually is, like, if the working group would recommend option A, it basically means that this will go into an advisory or, you know, becomes part of the rules or whatever way it's implemented. So it would become part of the, you know, official process as such if, you know, this is what we're going to recommend. So in that case, wouldn't it then be also that, you know, if the registrar doesn't follow the directions of the UDRP provider, that it could be held in breach by ICANN compliance? Because basically, I know you're saying we don't have any authority to force them to a transfer, but couldn't we just turn it away around and saying, if this is now becoming the required process and these are the steps and this is part of, as I said, you know, even an advisory or becomes part of the rules, isn't it the case then that ICANN compliance can just follow up with registrars then if they don't follow up on the instructions that are provided by the UDRP provider based on the information they have received from the parties that reached the settlement?
Anyone?
I just wanted to say, yeah, I think, Marika, if we were going to go with option A, I think absolutely we would have to provide some authority for the providers in that case. Because, yeah, at this point, there's nothing. It's just, yeah, we think you should do X, and there is no authority there right now.
Okay, thanks. David, do you agree or disagree?
I certainly agree that there is no authority in the UDRP at the moment to allow a provider to order or, in effect, authorise a transfer. Yes, so that we would need to look at that, I think, if we would go with option A.
Okay. I'll move on to Alan and then Laurie.
Thank you. Alan speaking. We heard last week, if I remember correctly, that Christine said that, you know, registrars who don't do this often at times ask the provider, or at least ask the provider in her case, for help and, you know, guidance as to exactly what are they supposed to do. So that indicates some level of unease, at least with novices. I'm wondering, to what extent is there any record of, since we're told that B is essentially what happens today, are registrars burnt by this, or do they one way or another? Does it seem to actually work?
Laurie, you're a registrar. Can you try to answer that? I'm thinking in terms of not being the largest registrar on the planet, possibly.
this is Laurie. In reality, after we receive a suspension, we get an email from the registrant saying they want to turn the name over, or the complainant saying the registrant agrees to turn it over. And then we have to confirm with both sides that they both want to do it and get an account number to move the name. So in my view, if the parties agreed first and notified the provider and the provider gives the registrar direction, and not saying an order, but just something saying that, you know, they have agreed first and they've told the provider what's happening, and then the provider could give the registrar direction on what action to take, it would certainly streamline things, and it would avoid the problem of registrars unlocking the name and allowing the parties to move it on their own or not, I mean, and dragging it out.
But by burnt, I guess I was asking, are there cases where it does get unlocked and then nefarious things happen because of that?
I have heard of cases. I can't give you a specific example.
Yeah.
But I have heard of cases where domain names have transferred to other registrars, including GoDaddy, and we've ended up being provided with a UDRP decision on a name that was not registered with us, where we went ahead and implemented the decision because the domain name was with us.
If I may summarize, Michaeli, and then I'll shut up. It sounds like we have a decision that either we come out and say, sorry, it's the provider who's going to have to take the responsibility on this, and yes, that's going to imply some work on their behalf, or it's the registrar who's going to have to take the responsibility on this, and they're going to have to put some work into this. Either way, I think we need to come off the fence and do one or the other. I'm starting to feel it almost doesn't matter, and my inclination is to side with the registrars because I think the small number of providers are likely to be able to do this in a better way than a large number of registrars, some of whom rarely see this, and some of whom are not necessarily going to be supportive of the complainant's issue, and therefore more worried about their own customers. So my inclination is to go, if we have to flip a coin and go one way or another, is to go with A and figure out how we can make it as painless as possible for the provider and not have to convene a panel, which has implications, I think, which we probably don't want to go in. And my hand is down.
Thanks, Alan. Okay, unfortunately, there's no. The only registrars on this call this week are Laurie and myself. Laurie Sler, sorry. I'm not too sure where the other registrars have disappeared to this week. So, most of you seem to be. I think what, you know, most people seem to be erring towards of the option A possibility. And Marika has also made a few notes there about some of the caveats surrounded with this entire thing. So, I mean, what would people like to do with this? And where would you like to go with this? Or is it a case that you think that it's not, that some of you think that this doesn't really need to be changed, or what? I mean, what is your general feeling? Laurie, go ahead.
I think as a registrar, you know, we would be okay with option B, but I think it needs to be more clarified. You know, as I said before about who's going to be doing the change of account or the change of control of the name, as opposed to just having it unlocked to allow the change to take place. Registrars are going to view that as, oh, I just have to unlock the name and wait for the parties to make the change themselves. And that's setting a really dangerous precedent, I think.
Anybody else have any thoughts? David and Ty. I'm not too sure which one is typing, so I have to call them David and Ty. Is putting a few things there into the chat about how changing the account has to be the registrar, but the provider has no control over this in practice. That's true, yes. I can't really disagree with that. There's a few things there in the chat maybe people can have a look at, and if they want to... Gabriella, what do you mean exactly? Gabriella's talking something to do technology accessible by the parties. Gabriella, what are you referring to exactly? Some kind of platform. Platform for what? So Gabriella's talking about some kind of platform where people can choose the options for transferring or not transferring. I'm not sure exactly what that would do, but and we do encourage you to think out of the box, but I'm just still having difficulty visualizing it. Christine, go ahead.
Hi, this is Christine from NAB. I think I kind of follow where Gabrielle's going. We currently have a process for settlement and suspension, not settlement necessarily, but suspension, that we use for RES and we're going to be using for URS and hopefully migrating to UDRP soon, where the parties actually log into their online account with us and mutually click buttons saying we want to settle, here's some reasons, you know, can we get a stay of the case? and they mutually go in and log on and assent to that, and then our, you know, whoever's in charge of the case at that time, whether it's the provider or the panelist, goes in and clicks, yep, okay, I authorize the stay. And so I think what Gabrielle is saying is that you would make something similar to that or make that process available to the registrar to log in and see that the parties have both assented. Right now, I just wanted to address that a little bit, is right now it's also being done just by a piece of paper where the parties mutually sign a piece of paper saying, you know, we, and they fax it to us or email it to us. I'm not sure how WIPO collects that data, that say, we want to settle, here's our signatures, you know, can we stay the case? So currently we're collecting it via paper. I don't know how much more technology would speed things up because we're already sort of emailing these documents around, but it is an interesting theory because it's something that we are sort of adopting here generally.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have anything to say on this at the moment? Marika, go ahead. Super Marika on the phone, everybody. Marika, go ahead.
Thanks for the introduction. So this is Marika. I think going back to the point that Alan made, and I think some people have made in the chat as well, so basically to get a sense of whether there's some really strong support for option A. I mean, the poll leans that way, but I think Matt posted in the poll saying, well, you know, preferred option, but I don't feel really strong about it. So, and I think we do see the providers having strong support for the option B. So I think the question is, do people feel strongly that option A should be pursued and should be on the table and further considered, or are people willing to go to the default, or I think the more current process, even if that maybe requires some further clarification to the actual language that is there, in order to move this discussion forward, because I think we do need to come to some kind of closure, or at least have a plan of how we're going to come to closure and not have this issue maybe lingering on for a couple of more calls.
Okay, thank you, Marika. Christine. No, okay. Right. We do need to come up with something. We need to actually move forward on this in terms of deciding on what way we want to go with this. I mean, we have discussed it, yes. We can say that we discussed it, of course. But if we are to make a recommendation, we have to be able to make a recommendation that is, well, actionable, I suppose, might be the word I would use. And please, Gabrielle, it's not your fault. It was an open matter anyway. I would recommend then that, Marika, if you could just summarize this and put it to the list, and then we can see if people can actually come back with something constructive on this within the next couple of days. Could you bring up the comments, please? Wow, that was fast. Look, I know you guys are efficient, but that's scary. Okay.
So we actually left off at comment 24 at the end there. Three comments left there that I think I categorized under other comments that didn't either fall under any of the charter questions or any of the recommendations we made.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, I'm just trying to scroll here like mad. A second. How do I improve this?
Actually, if you go to the bottom, you can just type in the page you want to go to, and it's page 13.
Oh. Well, I didn't know you could do that. Okay. Sorry. Okay, comment from ICA. ICA continues to believe that UDRP reform of at least a procedural nature should be initiated in the near term with a primary focus on establishing a standard enforceable contract between ICANN and all accredited UDRP providers. Any comments?
Okay.
I think noted would suffice because I don't think it really relates to anything we're talking about here.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this? No? Okay. 25. Some ICA members have reported that a registrar lock, in inverted commas, whether imposed in response to a UDRP or for other purposes, has impaired ready renewal of a domain approaching expiration. We therefore urge that the final report also contain responsive language making clear that domain renewal should not be impaired by a registrar lock. Sorry, I see Marika's got her hand up.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that we also covered this under comment 5, and there we actually noted as one of the recommended actions that we would clarify that renewal is allowed as part of the UDRP. I think we probably already addressed that comment there.
Yeah. Thanks. So I'm just actually looking at it and just I'm a bit confused. Why would... I wonder, is he saying that in some circumstances, if the domain is within a UDRP, they aren't able to renew it? Is that what he's getting at?
I think what he means.
Okay. All right. No, that's fine.
Some registrars have enforced it that way.
Okay. Which is... interesting. Okay. And lastly, I assume this is also from ICA.
This is actually a comment, a thing that was raised by Elliot Noss during our session in Beijing, but I think repeated as well by some others, so I haven't attributed it, but I think we actually already did make a response to it as well. But
That did come from Elliot.
Okay, so that's done. So does this mean we've actually finished going through all the comments at last?
You may want to just reconfirm that people agree with that, because I don't know if everyone was in Beijing when that was discussed, so maybe just for the record we can cover it and make sure people are happy with the proposed change.
Yeah, so okay, let's do that very quickly, going back down. All right, so the comments, the recommendations should be clarified to indicate what should happen with the lock in case a court proceeding has been initiated while the UDRP case is still ongoing. And the comment there, which is from the Beijing workshop, if we would make a modification to recommendation number 10 and to option B, for example, that the registrar must remove the lock within 2 business days for the purpose of the UDRP dispute, unless the disputed domain name is otherwise the subject of a court proceeding that has commenced concerning the disputed domain. So does anybody have any comments on that, any other thoughts, or do we agree?
I think a registrar who is confronted with this is insane if they don't ask their lawyer.
That's actually a very fair point.
That doesn't mean we shouldn't be clear on what we intended to happen.
No, that's perfectly fine by me. I mean, speaking as a registrar, you know, if I get hit with a legal letter or a legal threat from somebody that looks valid, I do take it quite seriously, and I do tend to pass it over to my legal counsel. And it doesn't matter what anything else that might be going on, I still have to deal with what's going on and what's landing on my desk.
To answer David, that half of it's scrolled down onto the next page.
Yes. You see, the thing is, they economized on phones. What he forgot to tell us is they also economized on monitors. He's using a 14-inch monochrome display, I think.
Actually, you'd be depressed to know how accurate that statement is.
Not really, no, because I don't work for you, so I don't really care. Sorry. All my staff have have nice big monitors. I think I'm now buying them 24-inch LCDs.
Yeah, I'm in the wrong business, absolutely.
Yeah, but you make more money per client than we do,
well,
on average.
I wish.
Well, don't try on bail bucks with me. It isn't going to work. And you can Google bail bucks. I'll send you a link. Any other comments on this? Or can we consider the comments have been closed? Can I actually say that? Okay, I'm going to say it. We have finished reviewing all the comments. Marika, please don't say we've not finished reviewing all the comments. I'll cry. Go ahead.
No, this is Rick. I think we have reviewed all the comments. I think we do need to make a couple of updates based on the discussions we had, the agreement we reached on the comments that related to the change of informal response period. So I'll need to update that. And we'll still need to probably go back as well once we've reached a decision on the settlement options to reflect that here as well. But I think the next step basically would be to, for me to go back to the initial report and start transforming that into a final report, making the updates that we have noted here in the public comments review tool. And I think then the main issues that's still on the table is the question of settlements. So I'll send a note to the list. If people agree, because I think there were a couple of suggestions in the chat to update option B to make that more accurate or more specific. So I can already maybe have a first attempt at doing that, and maybe then inviting that for inviting others to comment on that or make additional suggestions. And if people have ideas for specific language, please feel free to already send it to me directly. But I think at that point where getting close to being done, I guess, if there are no further issues that are being identified in the initial report as it currently stands. And I think that's the next step, basically.
Okay. Thank you, Val, Marika. Any other comments at this juncture? Okay, then. Now, We need to get kind of closure on one or two of these outstanding items. So if you could please respond to the various emails over the next couple of days so that we can finally close off those areas where there's a certain degree of uncertainty. Marika, your hand is up again.
Yeah, this is Marika. I noticed actually as we have a couple of minutes left, could we maybe go back to the two options and actually try to write in the specificity in option B that some people were asking for, if people still have 9 minutes to spare.
So which bit are we looking at, Marika, exactly? Is it B, is it?
Yes, I think there's one thing I've already written in, because I think Laurie noted that the to unlock, that was unspecific, so I've put there now in brackets. So step three reads, parties request the registrar to unlock solely for the purposes of transferring to the complainant with whom the settlement has been reached. And so that's the other language. I think I noted that this should also cover a scenario by which a settlement is reached in which the respondent actually gets to keep the name. So I think it would need to foresee that as well. And then I think there was as well, the language that we just discussed, adding that court proceedings are going on, that, of course, a domain name shouldn't be unlocked. But I think there were some other comments as well in the chat, and I think Matt was actually raising some issues. Maybe Matt can actually state what he believes is still missing here or should be clarified. That would help me actually write that up.
Okay. Matt?
I don't know that it's an issue that we can necessarily address, I think one of the points of discomfort that complainants can have with settlements under the current regime, sort of the option B way of doing things is that you're kind of dependent on, since you don't have an order from a panel or anyone else, the good faith of the parties, and, well, the respondent and the registrar to unlock solely for the purpose of transferring to the complainant, if that was what the settlement agreed upon. If you have, certainly some registrars and some registrants gut feeling it's more trustworthy than others, of course, probably the same for complainants as well. But when you're dealing with a registrar and where the registrar and registrant seem very strongly like they may be the same entity, don't necessarily have the trust level without a panel order to go through the current settlement process because you're dependent on nothing bad happening that isn't supposed to through the settlement agreement. I mean, you have contractual rights maybe, but that's not necessarily something that's viable if the domain ends up being transferred to a registrar and individual in Indonesia or something. Anyway, it's not anything that's particularly easy to address, just one of the reasons why the status quo isn't always totally comfortable.
Okay, thank you. Is that okay, Marika?
This is Marika. Yes, but as I said, if there are any other elements that people think should be further clarified here, would be helpful to let me know or suggest some language. So I think as well, if people are leaning towards option B, I think several of you have indicated that, you know, the more specific or precise we can be, the easier it will be for those parties that are involved in the process to know what they need to do or what they can expect to happen.
Okay. Alan, good afternoon, Mr. Alan.
Thank you. I was going to ask a clarification on something Marika, I thought I heard Marika saying, but I may not have been paying attention. Marika, did you say that but the name should not be unlocked if there's a court proceeding?
This is Marika. I think that's what the suggestion was in the discussion in Beijing. Actually, the question was, I think, from the registrar is that there currently isn't any specific guidance on what they're supposed to do or not supposed to do when a court proceeding has been initiated while the UDRP is still ongoing. And I think, if I understood Aliyah correctly, I think he just basically wanted to know that it should say somewhere that, you know, you can't unlock if that's ongoing. So in the case of a settlement, I guess, indeed, that the proposal is that even if there is a settlement, if there is a court proceeding ongoing, it shouldn't be unlocked until the court proceeding completes or withdraws or is no longer on the table.
Okay, I guess I need guidance. When there's a court proceeding, does the court independently request something equivalent to a lock that freezes?
No. I think the truth, it's just, I think what Elias might have been talking about was, if there's a dispute around a domain name, you might have a civil action case going on at the same time as you're embroiled in a UDRP.
Right.
And it's not a matter of the courts telling you specifically to lock the domain name, but you probably would lock a domain name that's subject to any kind of legal dispute. Because the last thing you want is to have the court pull you in and say that you as the registrar were, what's the word, complicit, implicit, whatever the bloody word is, in doing something to thwart the court's actions or something.
Okay, I guess the question I'm asking, not so much does the court order a lock, but in such a circumstance, I presume once the registrar has been notified, they can't do things in parallel, which would subject them to a problem with the court. Where I'm coming from is I'm a little worried that we say that a lock which is put on because of a UDRP must be maintained because of court action. I'm wondering, does the registrar really have the authority to do that? Or do we need to word that in somewhat slightly different way?
Okay. I don't know, does anybody have any thoughts on this? And Christine has noticed that courts sometimes will issue their own lock order.
Then obviously that would have to be obeyed if they're within the jurisdiction, if the registrar is within the jurisdiction.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can tell you, I mean, I'll quite happily put this on the record. I mean, we have received court orders to transfer domains and do various things, but since they weren't from courts that we recognise, we haven't taken any action. So, I mean, I am not going to follow a court order from, I don't know, Toronto, for example. I mean, why would I? I'll politely reply to them and say, look, we're based in Ireland. We don't follow your court order.
Okay. I was only worried that we're putting a registrar in an awkward position if we tell them what they must do is because of a court order.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the exact spirit of that is, but I mean, maybe...
Order. It's not a court order. Right. At this point, this is a court action.
I guess.
I just think we need to word this carefully that, you know, if there's a court action, the registrar, you know, needs to be cognizant of it and take appropriate action. We're not in a position even to say which takes precedent in any given jurisdiction.
True. Very true. Does anybody else have any last final words here? Or if not, we're going to call this a day or a week or a month or a year or something. Okay, then, I'm calling it. It is the top of the hour. I wish you all a happy week. And hopefully I shall be able to speak to you next week. And in the interim, please keep an eye on emails and such things, and please respond to them.
Okay,
may the force be with you.
I may not be able to attend next week. I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Talk to you all again.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Meeting.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.